Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Fort Bragg's backyard, this is the show that put the 110 Nation on the map. There is only one nation, the 110 Nation, and you're listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show. Covering each and every sport across the board. There is no sport too large or too little. It's time to talk the talk. Here we go. Here's the man, the founder, and your host, Mr. CJ Sports.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the 110 Nation Sports Show. I am your host, Mr. CJ Sports. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. CJ Sports. You can find the 110 Nation at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, my personal fan page, Mr. CJ Sports, the 110 Nation fan page, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check out our site, www.the110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. I also want to make sure that I thank Fit for Life. You guys can find them on Facebook, Fit for Life. You can also go to our site, www.the110nationsports.com. The right-hand side, click the pretty little banner. Find a location near you, 24/7, 365. Get your gym on. Clean facility, courtesy staff, everything you possibly need or want that is Fit for Life. Also got to thank Maxivation Digital Media for hooking us up with our logos and banners. Make sure you guys check them out for all your digital media needs. I also want to thank the I-95 Sports Network and Mile High Radio for rebroadcast or syndicating our shows. Without these great marketing partners and or networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do or grow the way we grow. So I want to make sure that I thank all of them. I got Mike joining me in the studio. I'm going to throw him up in here and find out what he's got going on Friday night and where he could be found, liked, and all the whatnots. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, CJ. Okay, we got two invitees or three, depending on who I can contact. But I definitely have in mind two people. One being Jordan Beatty Jr., who won both ends of a race on last Wednesday, as Eddie put together a Wednesday show, as he said he was going to do. Eddie Partridge, when he opened the track, or when he continued the track, when he owned it, when he started to own it, one of his goals was to have Wednesday night shows. John won both ends of the Twin 50s, so he will hopefully be on. And also a couple of gentlemen who have been really dominant. I'm going to keep trying to get them on. Justin Bonsignor and Jimmy Blewett. And then my dearest, who was ever on the, was on the Saturday Night Wins, and I've got one, which I already know, had a win in the truck, Super Bowl trucks, and but he's not ready to tell me. So I'll just say congratulations to Lee Mason. It was on one's life spell, but Lee came out of it on Saturday night with a win. So we got some interesting guests, as I said, led by John Bailey, hopefully. And possibly the Fortons. They were 1-2 on the recent height of wins. And set their goal to be 1 and 2 before the season ended, and they indeed did that. So got a couple of possibilities. I'll be busy on the phones, and we can line up. Obviously, keep listening to this show, and then also the actual stat pages, and I will update you as I book people. But you can find me on my personal Facebook page, the 110 Nation pages, the Hot Laps with Stats pages, the website, and my Twitter account, which is at Stats108.
Oh, Mikey. Got a lot of great and interesting things to jump into. How about those Cleveland Browns? Win 5-0. 5-0. But a lot of great things to jump into. And yeah. Sound more like a Cleveland Indian Philly Phillies score than it does a Browns Eagles game. Dale Jr. What a funny guy. Someone had a drug test him. talking about Justin Allgaier should be a Cub guy. He's our newsflash. He's already been in the Cub series. He sucked. he's nothing more. It's nothing against Justin Allgaier. There's just certain drivers that they're only to a certain level good. And Justin Allgaier is nothing more than an Xfinity Series driver. Elliott Sadler was the same. You talk about Todd Vodon, he was nothing more than a Truck Series driver. Ron Hornaday made, you know, really took his name to the level in the Truck Series. There are just certain drivers that they excel way better. Matt Crafton is another one. That they excel in certain series and are just not as good as they moved up and got into series where the competition got more difficult, didn't get on a team that, you know, really gave them an opportunity, whatever the case may be. And those right there, Sam Horner is another one, nothing more than the Xfinity Series drivers. It's not a shot at these people. They had, most of them have very long and, you know, successful careers, just not at the Cup level. And Dale, there goes Dale Jr. saying that Justin Allgaier is a Cup Series guy. I know he's nothing more than an Xfinity Series driver. He had his chance, and maybe not the greatest of team, but it was a decent team. I think it was a little bit much for him, and he is more comfortable in the Xfinity Series, and as long as he stays in it, he's going to have a long, successful career, just like Elliott Sadler, just like Ron Hornaday. You know, they had really long, successful careers. They learned to accept their role and accepted what their level of driving was and made the most of it at that level. And I don't know, but anyway, got a lot of things to jump into tonight, Mike, so let's jump into this. Where do we want to get started tonight?
Okay. Well, since you brought it up, let's start with the Bears. Dez Bryant, and I've heard two different things over the weekend, and I was wondering, and since you saw that 5-0 game, I don't know if it was on TV in your area or what, but if there was anything else that was said about the Browns picking up Dez Bryant, because immediately after the Hard Knocks episode, it was like, oh, we might bring him back and sign him. Then they weren't going to do it. He was looking for more than their offer, and that was the crux of the story I put up over the weekend. Nobody knew. And we knew from the Hard Knocks that they talked to him, definitely, because we saw Hugh Jackson talking to him. But he wanted more than what they were offering, and what they offered was $5 million, and he wanted more than that. And in fact, he went to the Patriots of all teams and didn't like what they said. So now he's back in limbo, and hopefully he'll get to reality and sign for the $5 million as far as your team is concerned. But I just found that interesting that they were going to, then they didn't, and he went somewhere else, liked their offer. And I don't know,
well,
will he come back to the Browns?
This is how I took things, and from listening to other shows, this is what if I'm going to take an educated guess on this, this is what I'm going to say happened. I think Cleveland was ready to make an offer. Cleveland liked what they seen, and I think at last minute, Josh Gordon said, I'm ready to come back. So Cleveland went from a team, that really needed to add another receiver to the roster, was, found their guy and was ready to make a deal. And then last minute, Gordon comes in. So now we don't need you as bad as we once did. So I think Cleveland backed off. I think at that point, and I still think to this point right now, Cleveland decided if Dez is still available come week one of the NFL season, then I think that we will see Dez Bryant in a Cleveland Browns jersey. And the reason is if a player signed before week one, they get whatever guaranteed money that they would sign for. Now, if you don't sign before week one, then there's no guaranteed money, and that changes the outlook of the contract. And I think that is what Cleveland is hoping will end up playing out in their favor, that nobody else will snatch him up. They'll be able to give him, a deal as of week one and then bring him on the roster. I think that's why it's kind of like we're going to get him to, okay, we still like to get him, but we got Josh Gordon back. So if you're there week one, yeah, sure, we'll get you. But, go ahead and, see what else offers are out there and anything else you like. I'm assuming what was said. I think we get into week one and Dez Bryant has not been signed yet, so I can see the Cleveland Browns making an offer and bringing him on the roster. And I think a good part of Dez's decision will be made in that being in the back of his mind. In other words, if he goes and talks to another team, I think he knows what Cleveland is offering and what can happen and the roster and what he sees as the Cleveland Browns team. And I think unless another team offers something that is equivalent to what he's going to get out of Cleveland and the opportunity, I think it'll take a lot of money I think he liked what he saw from what we saw in Hard Knocks. He liked what he got to see and the feeling he got there. And so, I honestly think at this point, there's a chance that he might, be fine with knowing that, let me just wait this out and I'll get an opportunity to be part of something. And I know what I'm going to get, and it's going to be comparable to really any other offers I'm going to get. So, there's a possibility that it's already an unwritten handshake and everything else. Who knows? But to go to what you said, that's kind of how I believe you've seen what you've seen with the interest and kind of the standoffish and then there being talks and everything else, is because it's got something to do with the guaranteed, if they get the guaranteed money or whatever the case is, if they're signed by week one. If they're not signed by the game one, then it takes away that part of the contract or what they would have to pay. And so I think that's why we've seen, especially with Jeff Gordon saying, he was coming back off of leave. I think that's why we witnessed what we witnessed.
Okay. Speaking about wide receivers in contract, one of the wide receivers in the year was the Thunder, the Saft, and Loon. As I was sitting doing some work for the 110 at my computer, I look and I see an alert from my local newspaper in the 90s saying, Odell Beckham has signed. And he indeed signed, and I put it up for a 5-year deal for $95 million, CJ, with $65 guaranteed. So Odell Beckham is in the Giants' case. As a Jet fan, I have no right one way or the other. I can look at it just like you said, us on this show. We can look at any team realistically. I have no gripe the Giants want to pay him. But he's one of those people, again, CJ, that makes news more off the field than on. And that's the biggest part of this field to me. You're going to give the guy $95 million. Okay, fine. He's a great, great player. There's no doubt that he was the number one receiver on the Giants team. And they were all lined up with, you know, Brandon Marshall that year. And I forget the third guy that was in the trio. But that year, they all got hurt. But there's no doubt that Beckham was the number one guy. But the problem is, when you get him off the field and he's not between the lines, that's when he also makes news as well. And the news that he makes outside the field is not as good as what he does on the field. So hopefully he can temper that a little bit, or the team can, or I've talked to him or what, but for $95 million, they better get all they can from him on the field and not so much off the field. That's the only feeling on that.
The Giants were in a no-win situation. Either you don't give them the money and your fans are calling for your heads because you let one of the league's top receivers go because you wouldn't give them the money, or you let them go and somebody else gets them. I don't know if they're going to quite get the same contract because I think he gets a only the max deal if he re-signs with his own team. I don't know if it's the same way as the NBA. And then now you got to play him. And you have to compete against him. So, the Giants were kind of...
You're breaking up, CJ. You moving?
No, I didn't.
You moving around?
Let me see. No. Is that any better?
Yep, definitely.
Okay.
Okay.
So the Giants were in a no-win situation, and I guess if I was in his shoes, I guess I'd want the biggest contract I could possibly get. And so for me to say what I'm about to say, I also understand that I do not know what it's like to play in the NFL. I do not know what it's like to feel that I have a value and what my value is and what I should get paid. I understand I don't understand all that and will never experience that. But looking at it from my point of view, this is one of the reasons why the Giants will find it difficult to be able to put a great team together and be more competitive. When you got somebody that's worried about being the highest paid player that's now going to consume a good chunk of your payroll, I understand that Beckham's top five receiver. I don't know if he's worth to have that type of money and be considered the number one receiver in the league. I don't feel that he is the number one receiver. I think there's probably a good 5 to 10 receivers you could probably throw into that conversation of being the best receiver in the NFL right now. But to be that
that self-absorbed, to be that concerned that you are viewed as the highest paid player. And knowing this just makes it that much harder for your team to be able to put a roster out there that's competitive. I mean, you're lucky because your running back, which is probably going to outperform his contract because he's a rookie, will probably be one of the things that saves you as of right now, because you can only get such so much under the
salary cap.
No, what am I thinking of? The players and the sign, it's not a players agreement. Oh God, I can't think of why I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on it. The CBA. Here you go. So I understand that, Barkley is going to help, absorb some of this because he's under a rookie contract. Like I said, I feel he'll probably outplay. But to be that self-absorbed and only being concerned about yourself, this is why you have teams that win multiple Super Bowls and are considered one of the best all time, such as your New England Patriots and Tom Brady, who doesn't take max contracts that
exactly. Oops. Okay, CJ left us. CJ, if you can hear me, you dropped. So, come back. hold on, gang. All right, gang, he's not back yet. I just sent him a note. I don't know whether he realizes that his phone dropped, but technical difficulty here. Let me see if I can get hold of him. And again, see if he responds. CJ, you there?
Yes, there we go. I have no idea how long that I've been talking to myself, so I don't know the last thing that y'all heard, but I just finished talking, so I don't know how long ago y'all stopped hearing me talk, but I just stopped talking and realized that you weren't there, and that's when I realized the phone hung up, so you have a better idea how long I was talking to myself then.
Yeah, we were just... You just said the word Beckham and then you died out. I don't know how many times you said Beckham, but where you were going with it at that point. But anyhow, I think
wow.
We get the idea.
Okay.
couple of things in that again, people made news more off the field this week. Hold on a second. Let me get my page together now. Let's see here. One tap. We got it. Especially in NASCAR, you think that the Cup Series was off, there wouldn't be as much news. But around the Xfinity Series and former Xfinity Series drivers, everybody seemed to make news, even though there was no... the racing that occurred was with the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series, but the Xfinity Series and former Xfinity drivers seemed to make the most news. If you want to talk about a great deal of money, here's one that we followed up on from last week, CJ. last week when this news broke about the Greg Biffle and his ex-wife situation, the first judge awarded him $1, or awarded her $1, and she said, that's all right, I'm going to go back to civil court and get something. And she sure as heck did. She got $2.5 million for supposedly not knowing that the cameras were there. So Biffle has to pay her $2.5 mil, which I guess for him is a drop in the bucket and saves him from court dates and costs and everything else. But
that is crazy to know that she cheated on him and he still got to come out $2.5 million.
Isn't our world great? Isn't our country great? There we go.
That is so crazy. Mike, the Truck Series race. Noah Gragson, which we've had on the show, took out his teammate, Gilligan, and Justin Haley finally got that win. I didn't catch after the race interviews. Was there anything said after the race? And, How a way to, instead of finishing 1-2, you guys take each other out in the last turn, and I don't know where they end up finishing, but not 1-2.
Right. It was very weird. It was very reminiscent, without the fisticuffs, by the way, of the year. I'm not sure when it was, last year or the year before, where Cole Custer and John Hunter Nemechek got into it, but I say that was more fisticuffs. This was just at the end, same kind of deal, the last turn, coming down like right before, and I noticed from the camera angle it was right before the start-finish line. And like you said, position one and two, took each other out, and here comes Haley in the 24, and then just with the win, and I was like, wait a minute. It was like shocking in the sense that you saw them, or the commentators saw them right before it happened, but then you didn't see Haley in the camera shot. So you figured, okay, one of the two of them is going to push each other across the line, and then one of those two is going to win. But no, they took each other out, and Haley comes up and from nowhere. I want to say nowhere, but like I said, his truck wasn't in the first camera shot when the two trucks started to collide, and so obviously he came with some speed and came in and got the win, but it was a bizarre finish with the truck race.
Was there any friction or interview? Was there any hostility? Did you see any?
I didn't really catch anything. I don't think right after. See, like I said, I'm a little familiar with this because, okay, I don't have a microphone in my hand and up to the people in the pits. But especially when something happens, I may go back in the pits, and wait. But because I have a pit pass and everything, but I won't go right up to a person's pit area until I'll give him 5 minutes, to climb out of the car and talk to his crew, and then I'll go up and make my pitch, so to speak. But I don't think right after in this situation they were asking them about it, and I think both of them basically said it was a racing deal. I think the fact that they were teammates helped that a little bit, to be honest with you. I think if they were on opposite sides, as it were, yes, each team is trying to win individually, but I really think that there would have been a heck of a lot more possibly said had you know, had they been on different teams. I think that that held it down a little bit. I really didn't see anything untoward or have them say anything. I think pretty much both of them, the first two guys said it was a racing deal, and of course, Haley was ecstatic. You know, he got it, like, dropped right in his lap. And you talk about, you know, that's a situation where, and I've even asked guys on my show that hang back, they said, you know, I was waiting for something ahead of me to happen, and that's exactly, even on you know, local tracks, and that's exactly what happened in this case. I mean, Haley was sitting back there, obviously, I don't want to say hidden because he was right. He was obviously in third place and just came up and got the win. But like I said, it's maybe the camera angle or the idea that it was a road course, you really didn't see, you know, his truck until he came over the line. And, you know, then you were like, wow, it just happened. And I looked, now I want to see that in slow motion. You know, that's what you left with. If you were watching the race at full speed and saw it the first time, you probably missed what happened, theoretically. I mean, not from the standpoint of the two trucks colliding, but anything after that, because there were obviously the camera, and this is not a fault of NBCSN or whatever, but they were obviously focused on the two trucks that collided and what happened to them afterwards. And, you know, so they were following that and the spinning truck, and here comes Haley, and you really didn't see him come into the camera shot until he was over the line, you know, and he really had to win. But it was a bizarre situation, and both times, and if it was 3 years that they've been in Canada, or how long they've gone up to Canada on that course, that's both. I believe the other thing with Cole Custer happened at that place also. I know it was a road course.
Yeah.
I'm pretty positive.
I think it was there too.
One. So interesting what happens to Americans when they go up to Canada, I guess. But just a very strange situation. And to be honest with you, the ending of the Xfinity race, and I saw that all race as well, that was bizarre because right from that last lap, it almost looked like he was taking that last lap on his own. And at first, I thought it was the victory lap, and the commentator was saying he still had one lap to go. And I think that what happened, strange as it may seem, I think a lot of the field seemingly gave up that last on that last lap, because I swear, CJ, I don't know if you saw it on the screen or if you went home to view it, but it looked like he was alone on that track. Allgaier. That last lap where they said he's got one lap left, and I'm saying, oh, I thought that was the victory lap, you know, but I didn't see a flag, and I'm saying, well, why is this guy running on his own? It was like he was taking a, you know, time trial lap or something. There was absolutely no cars around him. It was bizarre. So I would say, not having seen what happened to everybody else at that point, I would say both races ended rather bizarrely, you know, in a bizarre fashion. Really.
Didn't the Arca Series run? Didn't Bill Elliott make his return to racing?
Yes. Yes. And that was a little bit of a controversy, too. I didn't hear that. Miss Lee was more into that this weekend. I didn't get a chance to hear that on audio because I was watching the other races at the same time, and there was a conflicting, I think it was Sunday night or something, or I don't know, there was some reason that it conflicted, not so much the race, but what I had going on. I don't know exactly. I was watching both races, and then, I know what it was. I wasn't on my laptop at that time, or I would have had the ARCA website pulled up. Yeah, but then Miss Lee said that she said Joe, I guess his name is Graff, memory serves me correctly, Joe Graff Jr. or something, won. But Lisa, who was on our show, actually wrote back, yes, but he didn't deserve it. So then I started to look, and I was saying to Miss Lee, what happened? And there was a mix-up at the end and a whole big mess. And unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to hear it. This would have been on audio because I guess it was on MAV TV or something. It wasn't on FS1 because the truck race was on then. I think it was on MAV TV anyway, which I don't get. So I would have had to have it on my laptop. But all three races, I guess you could say, and strangely, the ARCA race and the two NASCAR races.
Rather, do you know how Bill did?
I don't know. I have to look back and see what Natalie ended up and the five people I picked. Which you all were from the show, by the way. I'd have to look back and see how they fared. I know as far as fantasy, Miss Lee and I tied, and we were both like in something like 117th place because there's like 1,000 people to play that, I guess. But we kind of tied exactly at, I think, 117 points and somewhere in the hundreds as far as placing. So, but as far as the individual placings, no, I didn't get a chance to see exactly where each person placed. So I'll get that. And
I figured that would have been something that would have been highlighted on or an article had been wrote about. I mean, it was Bill Elliott making his return to. And I knew I hadn't seen none, so I didn't know.
Right. And it, there was
I just figured there would have been
an
article or something.
There was a lot of talk about the number, and I didn't think he was in 9. And he wasn't. He was in 23. And I thought I saw the different number when they announced him, you know, when they did the press things on. I mean, he's in car 23. So obviously it had nothing to do with his son or the connection to number 9. I saw him a few times. I don't remember exactly where he placed again, but he wasn't in, you know, he wasn't a podium finish. It was, like I said, the thing with the Xfinity race, which I'm still confused about. Like, I looked away from the screen. It's like one of those things. And like I said, it was like, okay, we're in the last lap. And I'm thinking it's the victory lap because I look at, and, you know, I know Allgaier won because they're like, okay, this is just, and you go, oh, no, he didn't win yet. He's got one lap. And I'm like, whoa. You know, and I'm looking, I'm seeing him riding, you know, with virtually no one around him on the track, and I'm thinking it's the victory lap, and then I don't see a flag out the window. He's not waving to anybody or anything, and that the reason is he's still going at speed. You know, it was very weird, very, very weird.
I don't see anything else on this. You have ARCA number 7. Was there anything else on the ARCA, or is that what you were going to talk about on the Monday show notes?
That's basically what it was. That there was all sorts of confusion, and the winner shouldn't have won. I mean, he won, but a lot of people that saw the race, including Lisa, I mean, she's connected to ARCA, said he didn't deserve the win, and I didn't know what that was about until Miss Lee and I started to talk about what happened. But very, very weird. All three finishes, like I said, very strange finishes. Usually you're talking about one of three races, you know, when that happens with the cup and the opportunity in the cup. But a very, very strange weekend that way. And also another strange thing that keeps coming up, CJ, here's another case of social media really biting somebody in racing. And you had to really feel bad for the kid. Connor Daly, this broke, I guess if the race was Saturday, this had to break Friday night. Matter of fact, I remember putting it up because as I was listening to my rebroadcast, I was putting it up on the page. Connor Daly was to be sponsored by Eli Lilly, and Friday night, when he's supposed to be sponsored on Saturday, they had to take all the, I saw a shot with, in fact, I put the photo up with the story. They took the whole, they took everything but the number, and maybe his name over the door, off the car, at the last minute. Because Eli Lilly backed out because somebody found and circulated a post from Connor Daly's father, who was Derek Daly. And I guess he was at the time in the Indy series, whatever that series was at that time. They went through so many changes over there themselves. But he used a racial slur back in like 30 years ago, and Eli really pulled the sponsorship from the Sun, which was ridiculous, CJ, and to say the least, everybody that commented didn't have good things to say about that situation, because the Sun basically paid for what the father did 30 years ago, which, you know, the more people mess with social media, as far as, you know, you could go back to when social media started and find something stupid on everybody, I would say. You know, pretty much everybody. And you know, not so much. And, you know, we're always saying it on this show and in the back with our little discussions, always be careful, and you've said it, what you put on your personal page as opposed to what you put on the 110 pages, et cetera, et cetera. I dare say you can go back and find, you know, because we've all been angry at something at some point in time. Probably you could find things that you wouldn't want to post on Facebook, or that you might have posted something in anger at some point. This is before, I'm talking about before my involvement with the 110, or basically even yourself back in the day when Facebook started. I mean, you could find anything that, you know, at least one post that would have been considered derogatory. And this kid basically had his sponsorship paid, and had to, I guess maybe his father paid or somebody paid that was non-sponsor related, and I guess he did race but without sponsorship on Saturday. They pulled everything. They pulled all the side panels and everything off the. You know, it was just black with just a number. And so you had to feel bad for the kid.
Social media, double-edged sword. It's a great tool to allow the fans to be able to interact with athletes, celebrities, musicians, whatever the case may be. But the same thing that helps make that all possible and give these fans an opportunity to talk to these celebrities or athletes or whatever that they never would have been ever to even ask a question ever is the same thing that, I mean, this is something somebody else said, like, and you're pulling sponsorships and everything else, and, you know, I say it all the time, stay off this stuff. I feel that athletes, the only thing you should do is post stuff about thanking your sponsors or pictures with fans, or like, you should never give personal thoughts and personal, that's answer some very few select questions here and there that can't be deemed controversial. I mean, it's sad that this stuff like this is what's going to ruin what ultimately fans try to use to be able to talk to somebody they look up to, a role model, their favorite player, their favorite team. Like, you know that the odds of you actually running into them somewhere and getting their time and not them already be swamped by a bunch of other people is like slim to none. But because of social media, you have a much greater opportunity to get your favorite player or driver or whatever to answer a question on Twitter or retweet something. And 9.9 out of 10 fans, that's all they want is when they do that stuff is just for their favorite player or driver to really acknowledge they even live. You don't even necessarily have to be them answering it if they favorite it or retweet it or like it. Like, that's just the acknowledgement that my favorite athlete or driver acknowledged that a fan of his is alive and I'm that person. Like, that's all most of these fans want. That very tool is going to be ruined by all this other stuff, and you're going to see athletes and celebrities kind of refrain from being so interactive on it because they know in the long run somebody can twist something somewhere that's going to cost them a movie deal or a record deal or a sponsor deal or endorsements or whatever, you know, whatever their profession is. And it's truly sad that that's the way it's got to be, because so many fans have gotten an opportunity that they would have never gotten any other way.
Right. Well, very, very, very strange. But to take sport in its purest form, I guess you would say, CJ, started talking last week about Williamsport and the Mets and the Phillies being at Williamsport watching the World Series unfold. And over the weekend, and to be honest with you, I didn't see a pitch of this game because I don't know why. I just, whether it was on ESPN or I remember I used to watch it every year when it was on Wide World of Sports, which is no longer on, and this was way before cable. But Wide World of Sports, I used to have, it was a sports show on Saturdays. Used to have that every year, the championship game. And I think they had it special because the show itself used to run on Saturdays, but they would run special, you know, under their banner on Sunday afternoon with the final, and that's what happened yesterday. Hawaii won the Little League World Series over South Korea, and that's crazy in and of itself, because most of the time when a non-American, well, it's America, obviously, it's one of our 50 states, that's what's unique about this, that Hawaii won. Most of the farmers come down to one of the Oriental countries, Japan or, South Korea or, in this case, or China was for years the top Far Eastern a unit that was represented there. They came from, they used to come from different areas, Taipei, Taiwan, whatever. But they were always in the finals. And here again, it's very strange for an American team to beat one of the teams from the Oriental countries. Again, not to be racist, but I don't know what what they call on their shirts as Southwest and everything. I think it's Far East, if I remember correctly, is the area they represent. Hawaii led off with a home run, and from there they just won 3-0. But like the home run kind of powered their way, and the kid hadn't given up a home run for the entire Little League World Series, and he gets to the final and gives up a home run to start the game, and that kind of lit the fuse for Hawaii, and they ended up winning the game 3-0. So you talk about before any kid, or any player becomes jaded in the professional ranks, you have Little League World Series playing out yesterday as well. I guess baseball in its purest form, CJ.
I hope they absorb it all now, because it just all goes downhill and no longer is that pure fun sport that they grew up playing and grew in one day being in Major League Baseball.
Before we get into some other stuff, we'll go back to football for a moment. JJ Watt, let's talk about some good news while we're on, some good feel-good stuff. JJ Watt, CJ, when we talked about this last year in the immediate aftermath of the Hurricane Harvey and how JJ Watt came to their aid, the aid of the victims in Houston, 1 year later, he has broken a record. His donations have increased, or with his urging, I guess you could say, the hurricane relief for Hurricane Harvey, started by J.J. Watt, and obviously he's been at the helm of this for as long as they've done this. He now has the world record, CJ. His donations just for this purpose now is $41.6 million, which is a world record. It's the biggest financial outlay for anyone cares, I guess, in the history, I guess. That's the idea. And it was all started by J.J. Watt.
That's insane. I assumed that whole thing was over with. I didn't know that they were still collecting money because, when he was first hitting the million and the 2 million and the 5 million, it was something that was consistently in front of us on Facebook and on social media, but I hadn't heard anything about that in such a long time. But, you know, I'd assume that, you know, all that money was donated and they were done with that and, you know, was focused back on everything else. I didn't know that they were still collecting for that. That's insane, $41 million.
Yep. And that's an athlete that gets it, as they say. I remember seeing something on YouTube about 2 years ago, too, when he first signed, maybe a year into playing, maybe it was his first year or after his first year, he went back to his elementary school in Ohio. I believe it was Ohio, somewhere in Ohio. And I think around Columbus, if I'm not mistaken. I could be totally wrong about this. But he wanted to go to be a Badger. I think maybe it was, did he grow up in Wisconsin maybe? I think maybe I'm wrong with that. Maybe it's Wisconsin. But anyway, he went back to his third grade teacher and bought her a cake to thank her for because she was the one that got him not interested in football, but he was interested in playing in like third grade or something like that. And he went up to her and questioned whether he can do it. And she gave him the ultimate pep talk. You can do whatever you choose to do or whatever, you know, how teachers try to, you know, encourage their students. Well, obviously, not only did he go to Wisconsin, but he signed with the Texans. I had a great year. I think it was after his rookie year, as I remember. It was on YouTube all over the place. And he came back with a cake that he presented to her with a couple of gifts and tickets to a Houston game and, you know, and everything else. And it was quite a deal because they put it on YouTube and everything. They put it on tape and everything. There's an athlete there who every time we talk, it seems like it's something negative off the field. There's an athlete there that from the jump got it, as they say.
Yeah. It's like I said, I had no idea that was still going on, but to watch J.J. Watts and what he has done off the field and how he's been an impact on his community. It's not just doing something in the spotlight on a Sunday afternoon with national, you know, TV, but it's someone like him that does it off the field and does it throughout the week and does it in off season. That's, you know, someone that gets it and is committed to their cause and what they're doing, not just putting on a show. And it's good to see a player do that and also do it, what they're doing, in a positive manner as well.
Right. A couple of other things with football as we wind down training camp, CJ. I guess the ultimate thing is when you don't make the Patriots, you know, if you can't make the Patriots, maybe you lost it. Eric Decker, who has been around the league, including with the Jets, I believe he was the Panthers too, and the Denver Broncos, last month was signed by the Patriots, was signed with the Patriots, and decided to hang it up. So, obviously, he wasn't going to make the team and decided if he couldn't make the Patriots and the Patriots said he was done, he must be done in football because nobody else was going to pick him up. So, that's like the ultimate stamp of I don't think you can do it anymore. And he ended up retiring. So, Eric Decker is now a former wide receiver in the National Football League. Also interesting, as far as moves, and this is interesting from the standpoint of you always said you know, you thought the veterans would always start over a rookie, and some rookies have to carry a clipboard. Of all teams, and I've heard this all weekend long, CJ, it seems now that I think you even mentioned this might happen on Wednesday, the last time we had a show, this type of show, the 110 Nation show, that you mentioned that Teddy Bridgewater might be traded. Well, indeed, it looks like Sam Darnold has basically won the job to start with the Jets as a starting quarterback. And not only has the team gotten behind him, but none other than Joe Namath showed up at the Jets training camp. The last time I saw Joe Namath in person at a Jets training camp, as I said on this show last week, or a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about it, I met him at Hofstra University. But Namath was in the Jets camp over the weekend and basically gave him the thumbs up that he thinks that Donald could start. And, again, not that he has the ultimate say, but it kind of really feels the same way to make sense. So it looks like the Leonard will start the season as the number one Jets quarterback, CJ.
Yeah. Donald has done good in this preseason so far, and has definitely learned a lot and has picked up a lot and has adjusted to this. But even outside of that, it's really a no-brainer on this. You got these two quarterbacks that are very close from what we've seen on the field. And now you've got Bridgewater that's, you know, has some concussion issues, but has value. You can't trade Darnold. He has no value at this point. He's a rookie. So you have two quarterbacks that are pretty equal. One of them has value that you could probably get a good offensive line piece that you need in a draft pick. And you have another guy that has no value because he's a rookie. So you're going to hold on to the one that's going to cost you less, that you drafted for, that has no value to trade off anyway, and you're going to get rid of the other piece that you don't need that does have some value to it, and let the chips fall at that point, even at that aspect. But, yes, you drafted for him. He might not have no value, but if he continues to grow and mature and pick up the game like he has in these few preseason games, I feel that the Jets would have made a very valuable pick there. And I could see that being the quarterback for the Jets for a while. And, you know, obviously, bar no injuries, but we'll see if he continues to pick up the pieces and continue to learn. But so far, very impressive what we've seen out of him so far. And now to see what you guys are going to get out of Teddy Bridgewater to help protect him.
Right, exactly. And then we always have McCown in case things get really bizarre. But it's going to be interesting, to say the least. I'm just curious as to who that is. And, you know, can they, you know, what can they do with what they have around them? I guess we'll really find out this year. I'm not expecting a Super Bowl by any means, but it's going to be an interesting year anyway. Anyway, the next group of stories, we have two. Basketball, believe it or not, made news. Locally, when I say locally in terms of my team, and we said this when he was first appointed, that it's going to be interesting to see how the new coach, Fizdale, who used to be with the Memphis Grizzlies, interacts with Porzingis, and over the, I don't know if it was last week or recently or what, but the story came out over the weekend that Fizdale actually flew to Latvia, where obviously Porzingis makes his off-season home, and met with Porzingis, and apparently Porzingis came out of the meeting very, very enthused. So that, you know, that bodes well, and at the very least with what the Knicks have on their roster, you have to keep Porzingis happy, so we'll see what happens with that. But at least Fizdale is, you know, on the right track very, very early. You know, not even we're looking at camp being in, what, September or October. But I guess it's not so early because we're into September here. But, you know, but just he's on the right track anyway. And we'll see what happens with the Knicks. The Knicks need a lot of help. You know, there's no way I see them doing anything this year. Anything that they get will be gravy or surprise, however you want to put it. But basically, when you're one, obviously Carmelo been gone now 2 years. You're the main player that you have to keep happy is Porzingis. So he's to me, he's right on track. We'll see what happens on the court.
We will definitely
most definitely keep our eye on that. I mean, coach is no dummy. You know what this team is being built around. You know who the most popular player on this team is, and you know what player you need to have on your side and all in on your plan in order for you to even have a chance to make it. And also to be successful, and that was the piece. That's the piece that you need to go out of your way and go see and really get in your corner and let all the other chips come into play. And that's what he ultimately did. And you know, it's to me to be expected, not a surprise, and a move that every new head coach, when you have a player with that kind of weight, and what I mean by weight is, you know, he's a big influence on this team. He's kind of the leader, and then that's your fan favorites. That's one player that you want to try to hold on to because the fans, they support him. They love them some Porzingis, so it's a good one.
Right. Here's an interesting one, and I won't say we didn't think of this guy, but I can't say his name. I'll call him the Greek Freak, which is his nickname. You knew this was going to come sooner or later before the basketball season kicked off, as it were. That's the wrong sport, but you know, had their opening tap or whatever. The comparison, here we go. Story comes out today on ESPN. With LeBron going west in now the West, who is the player in the East? And they're picking, at least ESPN is picking, the Greek Freak. Now, I don't see it. I would say, is he the top player on the Milwaukee Bucks? Definitely. But I don't see, you know, we talked about this in the past. You got a couple of guys on the Celtics that would probably take the, you know, take the top. I mean, if you think of the Eastern Conference, a couple of guys on the Celtics, you know, which one of them, of course, you had on the Cavaliers, but I don't know. They're actually saying that this guy in Milwaukee may pick up LeBron's mantle, but he hasn't even led them to the second round of the playoffs yet. And I don't know. I just, you know, you talk about height, you talk about ability, but I don't see him getting nationwide press unless he starts the season like a madman, CJ.
I can see I see Kyrie Irving being the new king of the East, or I can see, depending how Jason Tatum comes back this offseason. He was very impressive as a rookie. I've seen a video of Ben Simmons actually having an outside shot, depending on how he comes back and how much he is gained and added to his game. And there might be another player or two that I can see, you know, in legitimate talks about being the king of the East. And so there's too many variables and videos of seeing some of these players expand their arsenal and their style of play. And so I'd like to see who stands out this year. And I think this is a conversation that's going to be an interesting conversation. I think it'll be a pretty popular conversation. And I think by the time we hit Christmas break, I think that we will see some front runners of who's going to be the top dog in the East.
Right. Skipping around a little bit, there's a couple more from football. Just at the end of, I guess I led with this article because it was the last one I saw as far as football. ESPN put out, and they do this every year, where your team stands after preseason week 3. And what they have, and again, you can look at it after the show for you fans that didn't see it yet on the 110 page. They have a listing from, actually they have the last weekend of games, and they did, you know, team A versus team B, and where each team falls as far as the league. So you can gauge where ESPN thinks your weaknesses are and thinks your team's strengths are. And they did that for all 32 teams. It's a rather interesting article. You can check that out on the 110 page. Also, a person who echoes your thoughts, CJ, when it comes to talking about Donald Trump. I know a couple of times on this show, when it came to different topics that were interspersed with sports, but somebody actually asked Tiger, and I put up an article, I will put up an article, I'm working on it, on this week's tournament, which was in New Jersey. The tour stop was in New Jersey. I forgot who the sponsor is. I have that all written down. But anyway, somebody asked Tiger, and he sidestepped the question because, A, he's a friend of Trump's, and he didn't want to get involved in the controversy over asking, you know, answering a Donald Trump question. So he basically had the same answer that you've echoed many times on this show. I've heard you, as your co-host, I've heard you many times say that when you have a president, regardless of what you think of him, we have to respect the office. And that's exactly what Tiger said. He kind of sidestepped the question, but he gave the, you know, the accepted answer, at least in your, you know, the one I know that you always say, we have to look at not so much the person that's there, because after all, we put him. But the office itself has to be respected, and that's what Tiger said. And it's just interesting, CJ, that this Bryson DeChambeau who won, I think he won either his second or third. I have to look this up exactly, but I have to go over the schedule from October again. But I think he won his like second or third tournament of the year. And back when Tiger was dominant, really dominant, everybody realized that everybody with a microphone and a notepad was going to be following Tiger around no matter where he finished or what he did. And it's kind of the same thing. This guy here, not that I feel bad for him because he made a couple of million winning the tournament, but he won like his third tournament or whatever, and it was almost like an afterthought. Oh, yeah, he won, but here's what Tiger thinks. And so even though in this particular tournament, Tiger finished four strokes back, he's contending on leaderboards. It's interesting, CJ. He's not winning tournaments, you know, with regularity, obviously, but he's up on the leaderboard, and he's definitely playing more consistent golf than when he, you know, when his I guess you call it his first comeback. This second one after the rest and the whatever they did to rearrange or readjust his back has really helped him. And but he finishes four strokes back, and he has the media following him all over the place. So, you know, the guys won the tournament, and he's standing there with, you know, waiting to be having questions asked of him. It was kind of funny, to be honest with you.
When that happens, I wonder if these players put their egos to the side, because we all know that when Tiger is competitive and out there playing, it is better for the sport, it's better for ratings, it's better for sponsors, it's better for everything all the way around. And so when he's not there, I guess these players get the attention. They win, they're the first thought, not the afterthought. But when you have Tiger out there, especially when he's being competitive, your interview, even though if you win, you're not really still front page conversation. It's still about Tiger. And so I wonder how well we're going to see them keep their egos in check, because, you know, very rightfully so, that could, you know, rub somebody wrong, especially if someone has worked very hard. And either someone has worked very hard and they finally won and everything they sacrificed, and then it not be a big deal and not even make front page, or it also could be someone that's having a great year and still not getting the attention they deserve because, you know, the amount of wins that they have had would normally be a topic of conversation. And, you know, rightfully so, these people, you know, kind of be, you know, feeling a certain way, not getting the attention that they feel they deserve. But for the better of the sport, you're going to hear about Tiger because this is what the sport needs. So I'm curious to see how long these players are able to keep their ego in check and allow this to go the way it's going for the better of this sport and the better of, you know, what a competitive Woods brings to this, and that'll be interesting to watch.
Right. The only thing I'll say in reference to golf and in reference to Tiger, I think a lot of, you know, it's not a team sport, and the interesting thing is, I agree with you. I think they realize, most of the golfers on tour realize that the more, you know, Tiger brings in the fans, and the more fans that pay their way through the gate, the bigger the pots are going to be for the DeChambeau is in any of these, I don't want to say lesser golfers because they're all pros, but the guys that don't get, you know, the weekly ink, so to speak, that might come up and win their second or third of the year or whatever. I think golfers are able to look at it and kind of chuckle and say, okay, I might not get, you know, my time in the spotlight, but ultimately, because of Tiger, I'm going to get more money in the long run. And I think golfers, more than probably any other athlete, can look at it like that. And I don't hear too much from golfers in terms of unrest about them not getting, you know, equal form or whatever. They know what Tiger means to the sport and to them, ultimately, as far as their pocketbook.
Yep. What we got next, Mike?
Two more things, CJ. One to deal with NASCAR again, and the other, I left the best for last, which you're most familiar with, I guess you'd say, for a couple of reasons. But number one with NASCAR, another one of these Xfinity drivers that is going to get his first break. He signed a 4-race deal with Chip Ganassi to go up to Cup and do 4 races this year. But over the weekend it was announced that Ross Chastain will, up till now, as far as I remember, he's only been in the Xfinity series, will be going up to Cup for either 3 or 4 races with Chip Ganassi Racing.
Yeah, sounds like a great opportunity, and hopefully he's able to make the best out of this opportunity, especially with the uncertainty of Jamie Mack and his future with the organization and what their plans are beyond that. So it's a good opportunity to audition for the possibility of a ride opening up. So,
right. And finally, CJ, our last story of the night. Urban Meyer, and there was a lot of people that said one way or the other. I was listening to, and I don't often, but because the story broke over the weekend, I happened to be flipping the channels between watching the races and everything else, that Urban Meyer got a 3-game suspension out of that investigation. And so he's not fired. He won't go, you know, he won't be going away for you Ohio State fans. But he got a 3-game suspension, and there were a lot of people that saying he should have gotten all or nothing. In other words, they should have fired him or given him the suspension, and it ended up being the suspension for 3 games. No game. And there was some thought, I think even last week you were checking into this, you thought that Penn State was one of the games he was going to be suspended for. He's not. He's suspended for, I think, TCU and a couple of other, you know, Sisters of the Poor type first games of the season. So it's really not going to hurt Ohio State's chances in the Big Ten, you know, race. When you come down to it, it's only going to be the first 3 games against, you know, the only team that you've heard of is TCU. The other two are basically, you know, like your Toledo's or, like you always mention, the lesser Division III teams. That's the deal with the Urban Meyer case, 3-game suspension.
Um, still crazy to me. It's still crazy to me that somebody gets suspended because somebody else had a domestic situation in their household. You can spin it, and you can spin it any way you want to spin it. And those that are anti-Ohio State and anti-Urban Meyer, they're going to spin it. But ultimately, that's what it breaks down to. And I'm sorry, it's not everybody's obligation. It's not everybody's mission. I don't get in other people's business. I don't know 100% of what went on. Regardless how I feel about either one of them, regardless of fact, you know, I don't feel that a male or a female. And I've seen some very violent and aggressive females out there. I don't feel that either one has the right to put their hands on each other. But I'm also not that person that just because I see that somebody has had some physical things done to them, I'm not quick to judge or quick to go to the aid or the defense because I don't know what happened. I mean, the person that started the fight could have been the one that got their butt handed to them. They could have gotten, you know, they could have beat somebody with a pot, baseball bat, or whatever, took a swing, and, you know, that was the only thing they knew how to fight with. And after that didn't happen the way they thought it was, they got their butts handed to them. I don't know. I've been in enough situations and seen enough situations that and I say this all the time, there's always three sides to a story. There's the side A, the person A, the person B, and then there's the truth. There's somewhere in between is the truth. And
right.
I don't feel, and I feel the same way, and I've always felt this way. This is not just me being an Ohio State fan. I feel the same way about the NFL. Yes, part of me is glad that the NFL cares and wants to try to do something about the domestic issues in their sport by their athletes, but I also don't feel it's their place to have to babysit and monitor. You know, if the female's being, you know, abused or assaulted, or if the male as well, call the police, get the law involved, and go through the proper change and get it taken care of. If I went tonight and got a DUI, or if I went and had a domestic issue, my job is not going to suspend me or, you know, take my bonus away or whatever the case may be. You know, it's not their obligation to be, you know, the police, the jury, and the judge. It's their jobs. You know, it's their place on the ladders to be my employer. It has nothing to do with them. So, I don't agree with everybody else having to get involved when it comes to this stuff, but then also to have somebody get punished who wasn't involved with it at all and honestly was just trying to mind his own business, and I don't know what he knew and didn't know, but he's not paid to sit there and babysit everybody's domestic relationships and their adulting skills and their parenting skills and everything else, and monitor all these players and monitor all these coaches. And I just don't agree. Like I said, it's not just me being an Ohio State fan, because I feel the same way at the NFL, and I don't know, Mike.
It's interesting, CJ. One thing, I know you've been busy and everything else, but did you, you know, ever see even bits and pieces of the news conference that he held or the press conference that Meyer held?
I've seen bits and pieces of clips of it.
Because I'll tell you why. What I was struck by is they said, and I didn't see it, that's why I'm asking you. They said that he came off more like the victim, and he kind of like dismissed the wife in this, the assistant coach's wife, the assistant coach that was indeed fired for it, they claim that like he kind of like dismissed her and more or less, this is I guess the enemy, you could call the enemies of Urban Meyer, said that he kind of dismissed the wife or the ex-wife and basically painted himself as the victim in this whole thing. And I found that interesting, you know, just from that standpoint and how accurate that was. And that's why I was asking you if you actually saw what he said, because I didn't catch any of it.
No, I just saw different clips of it, and from the clips I saw, I didn't see that, but they're also just clips, so, you know, you're just taking parts of, you know, reactions and part of what he said, and,
right.
You know, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to say either way, but.
Right, no, I just thought, you know, no, because I didn't catch any of it, but from what I read in the stories afterwards, they were like, he was painting himself as the victim. And more or less he didn't have anything to apologize for. That was the other thing that was crazy. They said that he should have apologized to the wife. If anything, it's Zach Smith that should have apologized to his own wife, you know. But I don't think Urban Meyer needed to apologize to her. But the bottom line was they said he came off as more like the victim rather than her. And I just found that bizarre. But anyway, though, hopefully with him, I don't know how long he's going to have to answer questions once he gets back or how, you know, he'll probably try to put reporters off. But I hope this, for the sake of the team, I hope this doesn't, you know, drag on for the whole season. I hope once he's back, they can let it go. I don't know, as a reporter, I don't know that that's going to happen, but eventually, hopefully for the good of the program, it'll die down.
Lordy, lordy, lordy. Do we have anything else we need to jump into? This was an early day for me anyway.
I think that's all 20. We got through 20, CJ. Oh, actually, the Jets signed one more. The Jets signed a running back from the Chiefs, whose name I can't say. One of the first names is crazy. I forget what the second name is. But it's one of those things where you sit back and you say, okay, and I don't mean to be, you know, racist. I don't mean this as a racist comment, CJ, but anybody with parents, and so, you know, with parents with kids, okay, young kids, babies, when they sit around with a baby book or whatever, and they want to make up their own name for different reasons, you know, whatever their reasons are, it just keep in mind, and I'm the last one to give advice. I don't mean it like this, but the first thing I always think of is, especially because I was disabled or am disabled. And I remember how cruel kids can be in school. Keep in mind, if you don't name your kid, I don't know how to put this diplomatically, CJ. If you give a kid a name that's not universally known or I think you know where I'm going with this, right, CJ? Help me here. A name that you want as unique, that you think is unique as a pair of parents, think twice. Think twice, because kids can be cruel. And if you look back at the story, I'll look back at it, you know, and get the name and bring it up tomorrow night. But this guy had a first name that if I can't pronounce it, I know CJ would have a problem with it. And it floored me, because I'm glad I can follow the Jets and not have to write about them as a reporter. We'll go up to the man and talk to him all season long. But actually what happened is the Chiefs put the guy on waivers and the Jets picked him up over the weekend. So we have another running back. I don't even know who our first running back was, but we have another running back for our backfield. So we'll see what happens. But I will pull that name up by tomorrow's show and bring it up as a subject. Not to make fun of the name, but to make people realize that have some mercy on your kid, because especially early in school, kids can be cruel.
Well, let's go ahead and get things wrapped up for the night. Go ahead and let them know what you got going on Friday, where you can be found, like, all the whatnots, Mike.
Okay, we got a good show. A couple of people invited. I will work on this diligently this week and try and get some things together. We have two or three possibilities, one of which I want to get on in timely fashion. John Beatty Jr., who has, to my knowledge, and I remember him from 2014 getting involved with John Visconti's legend team at the time. He started in a legend car for John, and then moved to modified. Actually, he had his own modified for a time. And then I wrote a story in my column also that he was an interesting case. If we get him on Friday night, I know I want to ask him about that. They actually built a car, finished the car 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, CJ, put the car in the trailer, in the hauler, brought it to the track that day after completing it at 2 o'clock Saturday morning, brought it to the track that night at 6 o'clock or whatever, started, you know, practiced with it, and that night won the feature. The first night out with the brand new car. Didn't have a mile on it, you know, didn't have anything on it at all. Their odometer was at 0, and they came out and won the feature event that night. And that gentleman's name is John Beatty Jr., and we'll have him on hopefully Friday night to lead off the program. Had a varied career with modified and then the legend cars, and now back in a modified. So interesting to talk to him. I haven't talked to him in a couple of years, but I want to have him on, and we'll have some hopefully guys come on from the Whalen Modified Tour as well. So it should be a very interesting show. One way or the other, I have a lot of people that I can invite and line up in the event that my first couple of choices can't make it for whatever reason, but it should be an interesting show. You can follow me on my personal Facebook page, 110 Nation pages, the Hot Laps with Stats pages, the website, or my Twitter account, which is at Stats108.
Don't forget, you can follow us here at 110 Nation. Like us on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check out our site, www.the110nationsports.com, for all the latest. Got to thank Fit for Life, Max Station Digital Media, I-95 Sports Network, and Mile High Radio for rebroadcaster. City Kingdom, without all these marketing partners and or networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do or grow the way we grow. Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Mike and myself, we'll be back in the studio to do it all over again. We'll have
Izzo joining us at 9:30 as Mike and Izzo will talk NHL. But looking forward to sitting back here and doing it all tomorrow night and talk about all the latest news coming out of the sporting world. And till next time.
Thanks for listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show with Mr. CJ Sports. You are a part of the 110 Nation, so be sure to visit the 110nation.com for everything related to the show. You can follow CJ on Twitter at 110 Nation and on Facebook at 110 Nation Sports. Until next time.